This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and we thank you very much for joining on this beautiful Saturday afternoon. It's the month of December, and we have a cold front rolling in, and there are times in our lives when we have the same kind of cold front moving into our lives. We're going to be talking about, if you can believe this, the gift of grief here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm hoping that you'll stay with us here. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. One of the hardest things to understand sometimes is what someone else is feeling when there's a loss. And there are a lot of people in this country, but around the world, who are experiencing all kinds of losses. And so this is going to really address all of us, every single one of us who has had a loss in our lives, whether it's the loss of a loved one, a loss of a job, a loss of your portfolio, because you know what, folks, that can hurt too. If you were counting on that for your future, a loss of a pet who is a family member. We have so many pets. Our family's so huge. And there's a joke in there somewhere. We won't go there. But the fact of the matter is we're going to try to take a look at the gift of grief. My guest is Rabbi Matthew Goritz, and I want to welcome you so much to the program. Thank you for sharing your time with us.
Thank you for having me, Richard.
First of all, you are a Reform rabbi, and you have been so for some almost 10 years.
Yeah, and actually now 13 years.
13. And you have a growing family, and it's a wonderful thing. You have a third on the way.
I do.
And that's an exciting thing to be a father three times over.
Exciting and a little bit overwhelming sometimes.
And obviously, your wife, and you have many things in your life, Matthew, that you have become attached to. And so one day when you lose any one of these things, there's going to be grief, right?
Absolutely.
Can we define a little bit, if it's possible to put a definition on it, what is grief to you?
Grief to me is any kind of loss that, and then you said it well, there are so many things that are valuable to us. First and foremost, human life, human connection. So the loss of that is grief. The loss of potential is grief. The loss of hope is grief. The loss of anything that is valuable to us is grief and something from which we suffer. And I say in a book that I wrote that this is one of the things that is as old as anything in the world that we know. From the beginning of time, if you look at Adam and Eve, either by metaphor or by truth, as our first people in the world, they're thrown out of the garden. They're expelled. That is their first experience with grief. They have two children, Cain and Abel. One kills the other in fratricide. That, of course, is the beginning of grief for them as well. And the stories continue until today.
And even the grief of being tossed out of the Garden of Eden, for that matter.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what was it that set you on this journey to write the book, The Gift of Grief?
What set me forth is, as a young rabbi, from the beginning, you don't get more than a day or two before you have to officiate your first funeral. And as a young rabbi, you're terrified to meet with the family, you're terrified to officiate your first funeral. But after getting over the initial fear, I started to find something that continued to occur over and over again, and that is that almost anyone whom I've encountered who's experienced grief has for sure been stripped down to their core and have suffered greatly. But so many of them ended up becoming the people who I also experienced, who were most spiritually grounded, most attached to a sense of faith, most attached to a sense of inner purpose. And it was counterintuitive to me. I didn't understand it. The people who have the right to sort of reject all kinds of faith and all kinds of spirituality, the ones who embraced it the most. And I decided there was something there. I had to find out why it is that people who suffer are also the people who have the greatest propensity for inner truth and attachment to spirituality. And that's what got me on my course.
Well, I know that suffering was a very big part of my growing up, just because of what I was taught in catechism in my Catholic upbringing. So I guess that maybe there's some good learning that I'm going to have as I experience those emotions as I go through my life.
Yeah, as I say, it's something that all religions, if you believe in God or if you don't believe in God, the one thing you know as a human being is you're going to suffer someplace along the way.
So how long did it take you to put together the what we now have in our hands is the gift of grief?
It's funny. It's if you hold it in your hands, it's a small book. But I always think to myself when I look at it, boy, it took me a lot longer than the physical appearance of the book. The idea came to my mind over years. It was solidified, unfortunately, by the events of September 11th. I was a rabbi in New York at that time, so we experienced extraordinary amounts of loss from our congregation. My wife herself worked down there and experienced a lot of post-traumatic stress from experiencing and witnessing everything she saw. And so it was a few months after that that I talked to an agent, a book agent who belonged to my congregation. I said, here's what I'm finding. Is there something here? And she said, my goodness, there's a lot here. And I went off on a sabbatical for a month or two and studied in Israel and studied with a couple of teachers, found that not only did I believe this, but the ancient texts of Judaism, of Christianity, of Islam, every tradition seemed to have something to say about the matter of grief, but not just the matter of grief. Of course they have something to say about that, but about the potential for growth through one's grief.
You know, we just experienced a terrible fire here on the Central Coast. They called it the Tea Fire, T-E-A. And a number of people lost their homes and all of their possessions. I don't know if any pets were lost, but nonetheless, at least as of yet, there have been has been no loss of life to this particular fire. So that is a good thing in that regard. But these folks have lost things, and yet there is still that grieving. How do we juxtapose that with the grief we have for, say, a pet that is, again, it's a member of the family or literally a family member, relative, that type of thing?
Yeah, I think it's an important question. And the reason it's so important is that one of the dangers in a spiritual life is to try to compare one loss to another. Oftentimes you'll have groups of people who will say our history was tougher than your history, or even a bereavement group, someone will say, you know, how dare you compare the death of your 95-year-old mother to my 48-year-old husband? And once you get into that game, you're in a vicious cycle and you get lost. I think it's very important to respect anyone's grief and to respect anyone's sense of loss, because to each individual, based on their own sense of life cycle, that grief is extraordinary. And you know, oftentimes, you know, when you hear the story of someone being a kid and they don't finish their food on their plate, and they'll say, how can you leave the food there? There are people dying in Africa. Well, of course there are, but you have to be able to have perspective within your own sense of living. Mm-hmm. So I also think that, you know, if we get too caught up in things, meaning the things we lose in the God forbid experience of a house being burnt down, you can't get so caught up in things that's all that counts. But on the other hand, you know, pictures and family heirlooms, those things are connected to people and people who have passed things down. So there's a lot of loss in that, and they have to be respected.
Absolutely. My guest is Rabbi Matthew Goertz, and he is the author of The Gift of Grief, Finding Peace, Transformation, and Renewed Life After Great Sorrow. You're listening to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and we encourage you, if you'd like to give us a call, we'd certainly entertain your phone call at 805-564-1290, 805-564-1290. If you're listening on the Internet, as many of you can do and are doing, 866-564-1290, 866-564-1290. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned. This is Tell Me Your Story. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you so much for joining us here on the program. New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And dreams kind of go by the wayside when you lose someone or the things that are near and dear to you, heirlooms, as our guest Matthew Goertz has been sharing with us. And Matthew, one of the things that we want to touch on, because we sort of already touched on it, we want to continue dealing with the subject, and that is the people who were affected by this fire that we were referring to, the Tea Fire here on the Central Coast in the area of Montecito and Santa Barbara, California. And it was a very short-lived fire. It moved very fast, and it was over very quickly. It was only like 4 days, whereas the last couple of fires we've had were a month or 3 months in duration. Totally different personalities. This one was by far the most personal that I've experienced since I've lived here, only because it affected people this time more directly than the other two. And so these folks have lost something very precious to them, a space that they called home. And maybe that's where the difference between attachment to things separates from the real meaning of that space that you call that structure, that house. That was a home for them. That was the place that they had their Christmases and their Easters and their summer vacations and those types of things. Can we talk a little bit about that and how we might be able to help some of these folks work through some of their own grieving process?
Yeah, well, for people who are listening, know that someone from the other side of the country, from the other coast, we were horrified and go to sleep at night with images on the television sets. And it's an extraordinary thing that there is not loss of human life, but our hearts reach out to all of you who have lost important personal possessions. I would say that one of the mistakes, and I think this is a typical and innate American societal problem, is that we think that being tough in the face of grief is to show our metaphorical muscles, to say we're ready to move on, and, you know, good for us, we have our lives, the houses are gone, let's build a new one. But the mistake is that oftentimes you don't get past your grief unless you do something that seems simple but is extraordinarily painful, and that's just to be present in your pain. And that means that if you are devastated, then you should feel devastated. If you're horrified, you should feel horrified. If you are completely and utterly saddened, then you should be saddened, because if you're not able to be vulnerable with yourself and open to your feelings, then there's no way to be able to move on to healing. The problem is that to say to yourself, okay, I'm going to spend some time just being sad or feeling pain, is not something we're taught to do. We're taught that that's weak, and that somehow you're not a survivor. And I think it's actually strong to do that. And when you open yourself up to your inside, you also start to find some answers and some strength and some wisdom that you have within you that you don't see generally, because we wear facades, we wear disguises. And the only gift, and I'm very careful with the word, because on the superficial terms, there's no gift in being devastated by loss, but there is an opportunity. So the question is, do you get through it or do you transform through it? And the suggestion that I make to everyone is to dig in, to be present, to give yourself the permission to feel what you feel. And somehow in that, very slowly but surely, you're going to end up finding some answers to what it is that's going on.
I know in talking with a couple of the people who lost homes up on the hill in Montecito, there were some who I could see the sadness and the distress on their faces, on top of the frustrations having to deal with the various organizations, companies, agencies like insurance companies and so forth. But in the two cases that I dealt with, the people said to me, well, yeah, it's sad and I'm frustrated and so forth, but I have an opportunity to start over. It's like I get to start over, so to speak, with a clean slate. And I'm wondering if that's something that somebody can jump into that quickly after. I mean, we're literally talking a day or two after the fire was out or was over contained, that these folks were saying this. And I'm wondering, is there an appropriate period of time that people should go ahead and be sad before, you know, be these things that you were just talking about?
See, I'm going to guess, I'm going to say at first, I guess, I'm going to guess not. I'm going to guess that person hasn't really dealt with the reality of what it is that's happened. However, one of the things I also believe is that none of us are in a position to prescribe how long it takes for someone to grieve. It seems a little bit quick to say a day or two after I'm ready to move on, and I think that's going to come back and bite them later. However, on the other side, if someone comes to you and says a year later, I'm still devastated, we have to give them the right to be devastated. We sometimes can't deal with our neighbor's pain. It hurts us. It brings up our own sense of vulnerability. So we push them. We say, come, you know, let's move on. Let's get over this. But that's us. We can't handle being present with someone else's pain. But if anything, a person like that, I would say, okay, good, I'm glad you have that perspective. Please know that it's okay to feel sad, it's okay to feel the pain if you have that. And I would say it's vital to the process of recovery.
And there are those who are around folks who are grieving, who find it difficult to be around the grief process. And so they tend to run away, don't they? I mean, whatever it is within their psyche, their past, I can't deal with this. I got to get away. That doesn't necessarily make them bad people. It just they've got issues of their own around grief and loss.
They have issues of their own. I'm going to say that I think that we all think that we can catch it.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, I literally know people who, you know, in Manhattan, where you walk every place. That people walk to the other side of the street if they see a funeral home on their side of the street, because somehow they're going to catch death if they go too close to it. So, I think that by being around grief, we somehow think that we too are going to catch that sense of grief. You know, you hear all the time when someone contracts an illness or something horrible happens to a family that you find out who your real friends are. And I think you're right. I don't judge those people who disappear. I think there are just many people who can't handle being around it. And those who can end up being, you know, really long-term true friends, which is why you go through a whole life and you think back to people who you thought were really important to you, and they end up disappearing during these really hard times.
If you've just joined us, my guest is Rabbi Matthew Gewirtz. He's the author of The Gift of Grief, Finding Peace, Transformation, and Renewed Life After Great Sorrow. I didn't think in my lifetime, early as it happened, that I would experience the kind of loss that I did. I mean, as a kid, I lost my grandmother, who was probably one of my best friends as a kid growing up. Can still remember that experience, and it was around this time of the year. But I lost a few years back what I called my big brother, and I remember very distinctly one day. It was only a day or two after that my wife and I were laying in bed, and the rage and the anger that welled up inside of me, and I'm like, where is this coming from? Does that kind of stuff happen to folks who are going through grief, where they go, I didn't know I was capable of that particular emotion? It's what I feel, but that's not really who I am. And yet it is, because they're feeling it, isn't it?
Well, the extraordinary insight is that you were able to connect the rage to the loss. Sometimes we just feel angry all the time and we don't realize that there's a good reason for it. And I think, again, there's a lot more of a potential for anger and for those kinds of feelings when we don't allow ourselves to be sad. You know, oftentimes, and I talk about this in the book, when I was a chaplain in a hospital, I'd go into hospital room after hospital room, and people would say to me, Rabbi, I know why I have cancer. And I would think to myself, you know why? Yes, it's because at the time that I slapped my 15-year-old child, or it was the time that I didn't visit my mother enough when she was sick. And obviously, there's no rational connection between how it is you raise your daughter, or how it is that you visit your parent, and one's own contraction of cancer. But I think for the human being, it's easier to assign ourselves guilt, it's easier to assign ourselves anger than it is to assign ourselves sadness. Or the realization that life is random. And, you know, why is it that the fire hit those homes and not others? I bet you there are blocks there where certain homes were left unscathed and ones right next door were completely burnt to the ground. Why? Well, life doesn't have answers to those questions. There is a certain random element to it all.
Yeah. And even those homes that are considered to be fire safe, the way they're constructed and so on and so forth, and they've taken all the precautions, they can still burn. Just because they're quote-unquote fire safe does not mean they can't burn. It just means that the odds are less in their favor in that regard, too.
And we can work out every day, and we can eat well, and we can still drop dead out of from nowhere.
And there are those who have a shot of whiskey every morning and a cigar every night, and at 105, they're asked the question, so what was it that made you live so long? Well, it was the cigar and the shot of whiskey.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Well, go figure that one out.
That's right.
Matthew, let me ask you, what was it that made you make the decision to become a rabbi? I was born and raised in the Catholic Church, went to catechism, went to Mass, and at one point as a kid, I thought, priest? Okay, sure. I'm not a priest.
The short story is that, and the funny story, and then I'll say something a little bit more serious. When I was 5 years old, apparently my parents asked me what I wanted to be, and I said I wanted to be a rabbi on a motorcycle. again. That would have been perfect for Santa Barbara, obviously. And I think what it was is that, and by the way, this I think ultimately leads to the book as well, is that my parents, for me, the suffering and loss I experienced, my parents split when I was 9 and a half or 10 years old. And the loss was devastating. And I always say to people, I was a child at 9, and I was an adult at 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because I'm second of 4 children. I tended towards wanting to be a caregiver. And not only did I end up giving a lot of counsel and care to my siblings, but maybe even worse, but in some ways what's built my wisdom, if you will, I don't want to come across as too wise here, but I ended up giving a lot of care and love to my parents. And when they were lonely and they needed someone to turn to, fortunately or unfortunately, as a kid looking back, it was very unfortunate. As an adult who does what I do for a living, I guess it was fortunate, but I did a lot of listening and tending towards my own parents. And so I think in one way or another, I was going to end up in a helping field. And for many different reasons, it ended up as a rabbi. I think the reason is because it wasn't going to be psychology. It was not going to be something in the social sciences. I think I also had a spiritual side to me always. I'm a kid who spoke to God in bed as long as I remember. Three or four years old, I remember talking to God before I go to sleep.
We're talking with Matthew Gwirtz. He's a Reform rabbi, and we're talking to him here on Tell Me Your Story. He's the author of The Gift of Grief, Finding Peace, Transformation, and Renewed Life After Great Sorrow. Stay with us. We'll talk more and take your phone calls at 564-1290, 564-1290, and a local area code is 805. If you're listening on the area on the Internet, it's 866. Stay tuned. This is Tell Me Your Story. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you very much for joining me and my guest, Matthew Gwirtz. He's a Reform rabbi, and he's written the book, The Gift of Grief. And Matthew, it's really a pleasure to have you on the program with us today. We actually have a caller who we want to go ahead and go right to. Her name is Emma. Emma, welcome to Tell Me Your Story. Thank you so much for calling. You said you had a story that you wanted to share with us.
Yes, and thank you so much for the program. I, first of all, strongly agree that everyone grieves at their own rate and at their own speed. My mother died when she was 91 years old and I was 55, and people were trying to make me feel good by telling me, but she lived such a long life. And what they didn't realize was that when I lost my mother, I lost the person who loved me unconditionally. And I was not a 55-year-old woman. I was a child, you know. I was feeling like a child whose mother had died. Mm. And people try their best to be so attentive and so caring, but very often they're confused by what words they should use. And so when they would tell me, but your mother lived such a long life, I wanted to say, no, she didn't. I wanted her to live at least another 50 more years.
It's never long enough.
It's never long enough.
I hear you. And Matthew, response to Emma.
Emma, that is such an honest and authentic story. I sometimes have 70 or 75-year-old people who lose their parents who are 95 or 98 years old, and everyone is throwing that same counsel their way, and then they'll look at me and say to me privately, but yeah, it hurts me that much more because I've had my parent for this long. And so again, I think that's people just not being able to deal with someone they love and their grief. So they try to find some kind of soundbite, some kind of catchphrase to make them feel better. In the Jewish tradition, people sit shiva. It's several days after someone dies. Traditionally, it's 7, where people could come and visit and bring food and offer comfort. And I can't tell you how many times people come in and put their foot in their mouths because
exactly.
They don't know what to say.
People always say to me,
Rabbi, what should I say? And I always say to them, don't say anything. Go there, hug them, sit with them, respond to them. But there's not a lot to say except to be there with people.
Exactly.
Well, Emma, we want to thank you so much for sharing.
And thank you for the program.
Thank you, and
bye.
Keep listening. Bye-bye.
I will. Bye-bye.
This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Rabbi Matthew Gwirtz, and we are talking about his book and the subject of grief, The Gift of Grief, which I'm sure that when you first came up with that title, and you sort of addressed this a little bit earlier in the program, that had to not sound quite right.
In fact, Richard,
The Gift of Grief?
It was all the publisher. When I wrote the book originally, I forgot. I think I had a title, Surrender Before Tragedy, or The Light at Our Core. There were a few different working titles, and they came up with this, and I said, that's exactly the opposite. I don't want anyone to ever think that there's any initial gift. Every single person I've dealt with would say, yes, I've grown, I've evolved, I've become deeper, but I would trade that in 2 seconds to have my spouse back.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, we understand that there's a deeper message here, but in the world of publishing, you have to almost be angered by the cover or intrigued by the cover. They open it up, they say, ah, there's something else here to read, and we'll buy the book. So there is a gift ultimately, but I could never look at a person's face who's experienced loss and say, come, you know, there's a gift here. There is ultimately, but no one who's experiencing gift fresh wants to hear that.
Exactly. And I think that one of the things you've stated already, too, and that is if you are around people who are experiencing grief, sometimes it is just so much better just to be there, just to listen if they feel like sharing, because there's nothing that... I think that the reverse we don't do. You see somebody who's happy and having a great day, feel sad, feel depressed. Come on. We don't tell them to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I didn't write there's a famous book, Why Bad Things Happen to Good People.
Yeah.
Very, very important book. It's been translated into many languages. And that's not been the question of my rabbinate. It's not been why, because I realized very early on that not to run away from the question, but I think there are ultimate questions. We as human beings have a limited enough understanding of the universe that we don't understand why. And if we spend so much time asking why and not enough time what I call responding to why, meaning being there for people in their pain, it becomes an academic exercise and we stop being a community. And ultimately, while we're trying to figure out the philosophy, we could be doing a lot to help people communally.
How is what you have to offer through the gift of grief different from what others have offered down through the years? What we try to do here on the program is offer new paradigms, new ideas and beliefs and so forth. How different is what you're offering as far as dealing with grief? Or is it something that is, as you've stated at the beginning of the program, grief itself, we've been dealing with it since the beginning of man. So is there any difference? Is there anything new?
I hope the new insight is a reminder of something that we know innately and intrinsically but don't act upon. And that is what I'll restate again, which is that when grief comes upon us, we have an opportunity to be present with it, to actually dig in to the wound. And the new insight is that along the way, in all the devastation and all of what I call the stripping down of everything that's around us, there's one other thing that gets stripped away, and that's our ego. And the ego could be a very healthy part of ourselves, or if that's all that we are, could be a very unhealthy part of ourselves. And if you like it or not, within the process of devastation and loss and suffering, with everything else that we lose, we also lose that part. And when that gets uncovered, we find out that there's wisdom inside of us. And I would say, and not everyone agrees again in the concept of God, but that I would say, God given at birth, or at least given at birth, whatever it is that you want to believe. And I believe the only time you have access to that real sense of truth, the real sense of life's meaning, of knowing exactly what it is that counts in life, happens in the process of grief. So the new insight is that along with all the other devastation that happens is the finding of something true and real. So it's not, here's your brand new 5-step program to get out of grief. It's age old. Plug into it because there's not much else you can do. But while you're there, keep your eyes open because you're going to find something out really wise about yourself in the process.
Maybe that's the new thing because we don't seem to do that even when we're going having a good day and going through life. We don't seem to watch as the saying is, smell the flowers along the way.
Not only that, but because there's such a stream of pain these days. There's communal pain, there's world pain, there's economic pain, that we don't know which way to turn. Every time we look someplace, something hurts.
Yeah.
So we keep on trying to move on, and the problem is that it just compounds itself.
It just keeps coming. So we have to find ways to say, okay, I can't stop it from coming, but I can figure out ways that I can better, I guess, cope with it or work my way through it.
Or be with it.
Or be with it. That's a good point. The Gift of Grief is the title of the book again, and it is Finding Peace, Transformation, and Renewed Life After Great Loss. My guest is Rabbi Matthew Gewirtz, and we are going to continue talking here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and you can give us a call at 805-564-1290, 805-564-1290. If you're listening on the Internet, feel free to give us a call. We'd love to hear from you at 866-564-1290. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and I'd love to hear from you, richard@richarddugan.com. That's my email address, richard@richarddugan.com. Stay tuned. More's coming up. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you very much for joining us here on the program as we are talking with our guest, Rabbi Matthew Gewirtz, and he is the author of The Gift of Grief. And we're going to talk about that as well as some other things. Obviously, this time of the year, it can be very hard for some folks, Matthew. I mean, we all, one way or another, we are all experience some form of grief because we've lost someone around this time of the year, or we lost someone at another time of the year, and we absolutely had a blast. I'd like to have you share with us a little bit about the Jewish tradition that this time of the year, Hanukkah, and explain a little bit to folks who aren't familiar with it.
Hanukkah is a, as we talked off the air, is one of the minor holidays in the Jewish cycle, but as I quipped before, the Jews needed something to compete with Christmas, so we made Hanukkah a bigger deal, and it's a way of being able to give our kids presents while our Christian brothers and sisters also do the same on the 25th. But it comes from a story of, and this is actually a good story of a Judah Maccabee who was an important Jewish figure in his time, and the opposing forces came into the temple where all the Jews worshipped or sacrificed and said, "You need to bow down to me. I am now the Greeks. I am now your leader. There's no God. You have to bow down to me." And instead of sacrificing cows and other things that the Israelite people sacrificed, you're going to sacrifice a pig. And lots of other people decided to go along with this and to start to bow down and to sacrifice things that they weren't supposed to. Judah Maccabee said, "No, we don't bow down." And he said, "Well, this means war." And he said, "Okay, well, you could bring it on." And there was no way that he was supposed to be able to win this war. There was a 10% compared to their 100%. But sure enough, they end up outlasting the Greeks. They go back to rededicate the temple, and the lighting of the candles comes from that there was enough oil to burn for only one night, and somehow the miracle was the oil lasted for 8 nights, which is where the 8 nights of the holiday come from. But the spiritual underpinning is that not by might, but by spirit. That somehow that if you stick with a strong spirit and you reach down deep, that you could come through against all odds.
Absolutely.
And it's, you know, it's an interesting what you say, because as a rabbi, the funeral rate goes up way high. Now, it's true it's cold, especially in this part of the country, so the elderly have a harder time making it through these conditions. But I also think that because of what you mentioned, that there's such a joyous part of this period of time, but if you've lost someone around this time, or if you've celebrated with someone all the time, these are very difficult days, and especially more so because everyone around you is so joyous, and they expect you to be so joyous, and it comes back to that same piece that we spoke about before. So you know, this is exactly the time that you want to pick up the phone. And I try to do this every year. I try always during the holidays to make a list of everyone who's had losses in my congregation. And I call them and say, "How you doing today? You know, the world is celebrating, and I know you must be feeling like you're falling apart." And they're always devastated on these days.
Yeah. Well, we have a caller, another caller. Susie is calling from Santa Barbara. Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, and welcome to our program.
Thank you, Richard, and thank you, Matthew. I've always been curious. I almost died of a broken heart and spent 3 weeks grieving, crying, and all that when my cat of 20 years died. But when my mother and father died, there was not a tear, not a drop.
And you're wondering why?
Well, I noticed it's not the normal thing. I do have one girlfriend who did the same. I just thought, well, if the rabbi had any insights or experience with that or what, any thoughts?
Yeah, thank you for the question. And it sounds like all three of us in the line are lovers of animals. My wife and I have a beautiful black lab with whom we're very close. It was our first child, if you will. I think there are a couple of things. I don't know you well, so I don't know your history and your relationship with your family members. But sometimes they say that the people with whom we spend the most time are the ones that we can project all of our feelings onto. So when it's why we yell more at the people we love sometimes, and we give the silent treatment to the people we love sometimes. It's the people who don't give us unconditional love that we sometimes are nicer to because we have no other choice. So I have found in these situations that, talk about my own dog, that I can be much sadder and much more vulnerable with him, if you will, because he's a member of the family, than I can with someone even my parents, who I no longer spend time with every day. And so sometimes it's a place where, yes, I'm mourning for the loss of the animal, but I'm also mourning for many, many things, and the animal is the vehicle. Is not just the animal, him or herself, but also representing loss and pain generally.
And I would maybe add to that, Matthew, that just because you don't have the emotional outpouring, say, for a family member as opposed to your pet who you spent so much time with, doesn't mean you love them any less. I think that's one of the concerns I think folks have, is that I didn't gush and I didn't emote in the way that I did before. So that must mean I didn't love them, and the reality is just the opposite, that it doesn't mean that at all.
Yeah, very, very important point. Yeah. And it's funny, we always let kids off the hook. We don't let ourselves off the hook.
Yeah.
And sometimes a kid will giggle at a loss, or we'll just become quiet. I mean, let him be. You know, he's only 13. But we as adults, I think your last caller said this perfectly, we don't become fully adults until we experience all kinds of loss. Yeah.
Well, Susie, I want to thank you so much for calling. Did you have another final comment?
Yeah, I do, actually. What I would like to think is true is I left home at 14 because of the abuse, the beatings and the abuse. But before my parents died, my father first, I flew back to Wisconsin, made my peace with him, felt complete, and then a letter to my mom and a talk to my mom just before she died. We actually got very close. And so what I would like to believe is I was complete. I had, like, done everything, you know, and grieved in my own little way, which was forgiveness,
mm-hmm.
not only for them but for myself. Could that be possible?
Absolutely. I think 100%. I think that having no regrets is such an important thing, and to the fact that you had the courage to make peace with them, especially after what it is that you described, took extraordinary courage, and in some ways, it sounds like such a counterintuitive thing to say, but you may have found some peace in their loss because of the fact that you were able to get back what you didn't have earlier.
Well, that's phenomenal.
I agree.
And that's what it's about. It's making those connections if you feel you're strong enough to do so, and you were and you did, and I commend you for that. And I thank you so much for calling the program.
Thank you so much.
Susie, thanks again for calling Tell Me Your Story.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and we're talking with Rabbi Matthew Gewirtz, and he is the author of The Gift of Grief. And we're going to continue talking, and we'll still have a little time left if you'd like to give us a call. 805-564-1290 or 866-564-1290 if you're listening online. And we certainly encourage you to give us a call today or on any day when we're doing this program. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you for staying with us here on our program. And we're here every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time, taking your calls and talking to our guests like Rabbi Matthew Gewirtz, the author of The Gift of Grief. And we were talking off-air. I remember doing a program not too long ago where we were conversing off-mic during the commercial breaks, and they were as good as the program we were doing, and thinking, well, forget the commercials then. We should just keep talking, you know. But we were talking about the issue of feeling guilty for not having done what Susie did, for not having reconciled, if you will, and at least gone that extra step to say, look, this is how I feel, this is how I felt when this happened and that happened, and I just want you to know I forgive you, or however that conversation transpires in word or letter. Let's talk a little, have you talk a little bit about that.
Well, the first thing I'll say, and I'll just speak for my own people, that people think that intrinsic to Judaism is that of guilt, and that's what we were laughing mostly about, of course, off air, was the guilt we feel like was passed on to us. And I tell my congregation almost weekly that I don't do guilt. So I feel like the old time preachers are the ones who yell at their congregations that they don't come enough. And of course, when are they yelling at them? When they're there. And, so sure enough, they're not coming back the next week if you're yelling at them the week before. So I try to do everything I can to make it an encouraging experience. I'm not saying that I don't say things that are not difficult ethically. I hold high ethical standards, but one of them is not guilt. With that said, you can't tell someone not to feel something. So one of the things we do, again, is feel a lot of guilt. Now, what I'm going to say is it may be a stretch for some, but I would just say that be open to what it is that I'm going to offer, and that is that I believe strongly, and this is from a Jewish point of view, and I know for sure my Christian brothers and sisters also have similar views, that I don't believe it's over when our physical life is over here. So put that on one burner. The other burner is that I feel like when someone dies, that all the things they held on to here, all the regrets and all the revenge and all the anger, and even people who have been horribly abusive in certain regards, I think those are earthly traits. And I think when they get to wherever they go next, that stuff falls away, and all that's left is the part that wanted to love and the part that wanted to care. So I do believe, and I don't believe in the sense of talking out loud or having major seances necessarily, but I do believe that we can commune with those who have left. And I think that if that is the case, then why is it that we can't continue to be able to ask for forgiveness and to be able to grant forgiveness to those who have gone? And we're not going to get the answer back the way that you and I are talking now, but I think from within, I think our hearts and our spirits can eventually feel that sense of connection and reconciliation. And I've seen it, I believe it, and I encourage it wholeheartedly.
Well, I can say that I've been fortunate that I've had two experiences where I've had two people who have passed on who were very close to me, my grandmother on my mother's side and then my big brother. And I was lucky enough to have a dream from each of them, as it were. That's the way I look at it. How both of them seemed to somehow materialize in the real world here. And it was so fascinating how that happened, and I've never forgotten those dreams. Even when I think about those dreams, try to remember the images, they're still as strong in my mind as they were when I first had them.
Yeah.
And the feelings as well. So
I believe that 100%, and I believe that there's a writer who says that part of reconciliation, even if we don't think the person out there deserves forgiveness, one of the reasons you do it is because you're unburdening yourself. So
yeah.
To walk around with hatred and to walk around with anger is as much painful to you ultimately as it is to the person you're feeling angry at. So again, I do believe that when someone leaves this world, that they're no longer capable of inflicting the same kind of pain, and all that's left is a much more gentle soul. So I think it's well worthwhile to be able to grant forgiveness. Once you've worked through it, by the way, I don't think it's just golly gee, it's over.
Yeah.
But eventually you have to get rid of it, because otherwise your life becomes very heavy.
If you can do it while they're here in this life, if you feel strong enough to do it, then certainly do so, because I don't think that there is anything that takes the place of that. But if they've already gone, the only other alternative is, as you've just described, to speak to them from your heart and offer that forgiveness to release yourself. I mean, that's the real big thing, is to release oneself from those burdens, those stones, so to speak, that we carry with us.
100%.
I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. I want to give you an opportunity before we close out the program to tell people how, aside from this program, which is nearly over, they can get in touch with you, Matthew.
Thank you, Richard, and what a lovely experience to be in conversation with you on the phone. The book is called The Gift of Grief, Finding Peace, Transformation, and Renewed Life After Great Sorrow. And the website that I have is my synagogue's website, which is www.tbj, that's Tom Book Jerry, tbj.org. And the book can be found in your local bookstores, as it can be found on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com, etc.
Okay. Again, that website is tbjtombobgeorge.org, and the book, once again, is The Gift of Grief, Finding Peace, Transformation, and Renewed Life After Great Sorrow. And I certainly hope, I will close out the program with this incredible experience my wife and I had. We had just come back from a trip from Ireland some months prior, and we had just called Ireland to speak with the people we had stayed with to find out that the woman had just passed away, and they were in the process of the wake, which went on for a week, and nearly everyone in that town came to visit her. Well, my big brother was living with us at the time, and we had put up a little shrine for her in one of our rooms, and he went in there, and he came back out in tears, and he said, "I hope that the grieving process is short." The three of us just hugged and cried, and it was just a remarkable experience.
Cool.
So he didn't even know this woman, but he only knew her through us. And she was very special to us, and that was extraordinary, how another person, not having a clue, really no connection other than us, was able to, in a sense, sort of share in that loss that we felt, because we could feel it even through the phone lines from the husband who was left, and that was hard enough. But I thank you so much for the gift of this time and your book, The Gift of Grief.
Thank you so much, Richard.
I'm Richard Dugan. Stay on the line, Matthew. We'll be with you in just a moment. I'm Richard Dugan, and you're listening to Tell Me Your Story. Next week is an interesting program. It's the day before the winter solstice, the 21st of December, next Sunday. Well, Saturday, we're going to be talking with a return guest, Flo Magdalena. We're going to be talking a little bit about the birth of Christ and all of the literal and metaphorical meanings there, and also the role that Mary Magdalene played, if she even had a role in that whole process, here on Tell Me Your Story. We want you to join us every Saturday at this time and check out the website, richarddugan.com. That's Richard, D-U-G-A-N.com. You can also email me, richard@richarddugan.com. Have yourselves a terrific weekend. Hope that you will join us again next Saturday at this same time. For Tell Me Your Story, I'm Richard Dugan. Love to all.